This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be.
And I'm joined by Timothy. Timothy, what's going on, my friend?
Oh, it's going good. It's going...
I mean, we're going to get to it later, but it's really kind of pretty cool to see all the feedback for the Rumble, real positive online and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And people excited into it. I'm definitely into that. And definitely excited to talk about it here with you. And yeah, it's good for CWF. I thought that they did a great job, and it's awesome to see them getting respected for it.
Yeah, you know, and which kind of led to a lot of controversy on Twitter because Dave Meltzer, you know, is really putting over the PWG show. And I mean, and that's really cool and all. It's not my bag, my cup of tea, where I don't think it's like the world's greatest wrestling. I've always been that guy who likes a three ring circus type of thing. I like a little bit of the clowns. I like the bears. I like the ringmaster. I like the flying trapeze. But when you get a little too much flying trapeze, it can be repetitive. And not just flying trapeze, but a little bit of anything. It's just kind of like the old, those deathmatch tournaments. I was never a big fan of those because it got repetitive and it become trying to top, like you thought just nothing could top the first match. And then two or three matches down, they're freaking, you know, flaming tables through thumbtacks, through lines of death grips or whatever and stuff. But you're a regular PWG guy. You go to pretty much would you be fair to say you go to most of their shows?
I would say it's fair to say I went to most of their shows for quite a long time. I've definitely stepped back in the past probably about a year. I think last year I missed a couple shows here and there. This year I've already missed a couple shows. I think I've only missed a couple shows this year, a couple shows last year. I'm kind of planning on kind of picking and choosing when I go, especially with the ticket prices like they are. And not to say the show quality's down, but, you know, there was, I think, one show, Mystery Vortex, a while back. I was kind of, oh, I'll skip this one until they announced it was Mystery Vortex. And then it was, well, I got to go in case Keith Lee is going to show up for the first time, which he didn't. There was that kind of feeling for me that, like, there's certain guys that'll get me there. And if they're not on the cards, I'm not going to go. This year's Bola was I was fine with skipping the whole thing, until Walter was going to be there. So I ended up finding a ticket to go to see Walter at least one night, even if I didn't get to see him in a singles match. But I mean, you talk about the Circus Sideshow and too much flying trapeze. I mean, I don't know if you've seen much of Bola, but for me, I felt like the night three of Bola that I went to, I haven't watched the rest back on tape yet, was a pretty well-balanced show overall. When you got guys like Walter, Jonah Rock, Keith Lee, and Jeff Cobb, I mean, there's plenty of big bears there. And when the finals come down to two big bears and maybe Ricochet is the little otter in between the two, it does have a nice mix for me. But I get what you're saying, that it can turn some people off that there is a lot of same, same, same. There isn't a lot of mix of styles, and it can definitely turn a lot of people off when you hear Meltzer talk. The way he talks about it right now is just, I hate to say it, but as someone who goes, it's off-putting the way that he talks about it. And then I listen to him, and he has almost no concept of what he's saying. He's just so caught up in it, and it just goes to show that, like, these years and years of people really looking up to Meltzer, it's kind of funny to think, like, if he wasn't the only one talking about some of these matches, would they have gone down in history as big of a deal as they were? Because, like, there's a lot of stuff where you think of it and you're like, was he just caught up in the moment for, like, you know, the 90s All Japan's women's? Like, you know, not to say that the wrestling's not good, but was it a little bit of that? Because, I mean, this is just one anecdote that I'll point out from him talking about PWG. He's explaining how the big title match that just happened recently between Ricochet and Chuck Taylor, oh, it was great, and they took the top rope off, and, you know, that's fine, though, because this isn't a company that does that regularly. So because they don't do a lot of funky booking all the time, it's okay for them to do it every now and then. And then I'm like, well, when Chuck Taylor won the title, Zack Sabre Jr. took the bottom rope off. So that's just the title match right before.
Yeah.
So for him to say, like, oh, because they never do stuff like this, well, they just did it. And then when he does his kind of, oh, someone reminded him of that a couple days later, he says, well, you know, the Chuck Taylor took the bottom rope off in his match with Zack Sabre Jr. too. So I guess, you know, he doesn't even say I was wrong about saying it's not overbooking that they do all the time. But he just essentially says, like, I guess the story is that in Chuck Taylor's title matches, he takes the ropes off. And it's like, that's not the story, though. The story is in the first match, Sabre took the bottom rope off so that Chuck Taylor couldn't get the rope break. And in the second match, Chuck Taylor takes the top rope off so that Ricochet can't do top rope moves. The two things play off of each other, but they're not. It's not Chuck Taylor likes to take the ropes off in his matches. And it's just, again, it just shows that, like, the storytelling aspect of the wrestling is flying over his head. And it's just kind of insane to think, like, he's defending it to Stutzy, specifically on Twitter, saying, oh, you picked the wrong week to attack PWG for storytelling. And I kind of want to go, like, you say the wrong week, Melts, but is that because you just don't pay attention? Like,
yeah.
PWG has always had some stories. People don't pay attention to it or don't give a shit about it. That's another thing. But Willie Mack and Brian Cage, they got blackballed from PWG for a time because there was a storyline that was so important to Super Dragon that when they didn't deliver on it properly, he was pissed off and he didn't want them in his company anymore. So there is story to PWG, you just have to pay attention to it, I guess. And Meltzer's not the guy to be defending storytelling and wrestling because he just doesn't... I don't know if he really sees it anymore. I think he's blinded.
And that's an interesting point about the storytelling, where a lot of people... I mean, I've kind of tuned off on PWG because of the way the DVDs are released. It's like they're not released in a timely manner. Like, most companies get stuff out onto streaming services within a week. How long does TWG usually take? About a month, month and a half before they release the DVD?
I mean, yeah, sometimes longer than that.
So, I mean, for right there, you kind of forget what the damn story is, what they're trying to say, because people are on to the next thing. I mean, yeah, they do. PWG definitely has a hardcore following, don't get me wrong. But when it comes to, like, their storytelling, it's easy to get swept under the rug because people... I mean, they have X amount of time on their hands, and if a show's happened a month and a half later, unless it got, like, you know, unless, like, Meltzer, which it does help, because PWG, I'm sure, I bet you 90%, but I bet you 70% of that damn audience is probably Wrestling Observer subscribers, give or take, and so those are the ones who are buying the DVDs, but, I mean, a lot of times it's like there's so much quality wrestling now, you can go and go on to another thing and just totally forget. And you don't remember what the damn stories are because some people might, you know, be watching PWG like how they do on High Spots where they're like a year behind on it and stuff.
Yeah, and that's another problem is you don't necessarily have seen everything if you're only coming in and out from show to show because the DVDs take so long or because maybe you're someone who doesn't even have a fucking DVD player. I mean, realistically, yeah. For me, it wouldn't be worth it to me to buy DVDs because I wouldn't be able to watch them. I don't have
most,
a DVD
most
player
Most computers
works.
Don't have disc drives anymore.
Yeah, right? So it turns into that. So if there's fans in that crowd who haven't gone to every show, which is becoming harder and harder to do with it being so hard to get tickets, even the fans there can't follow the stories. So that just kind of breeds... the idea that you don't work to the stories because even if you were like trying to relate it to say make a good show for the crowd there, what percentage of the crowd even was that the last show to follow the story? Then you play into stuff like Bola, stuff like All Star Weekend that's intentionally pushed as a super card weekend. You know, forget everything, nothing matters except for just high octane action. People are flying in from all over the world, so they're not, and this is fans, not even just wrestlers, are flying over from all over the world, so there's no way that they necessarily have context. There's people who've only watched the last year's Bola and then this year's Bola, so how realistically are you going to play off of any kind of storyline there when half the guys are gone? Like, from Bola to Bola, I guess probably you could say, like, from last Bola to this Bola, there might be overlap of, like, you know, a half dozen guys, right?
Right.
But if you were watching just Bolas, and that's it, over the course of 3 to 5 years, I guarantee there's almost 100% turnover in the guys that are in the tournament because they disappear. They go to bigger companies. They get even signed to ROH, and they're not allowed to come back. They're in WWE. They're in TNA. They're all over the place, you know? So it's just, like, it's kind of crazy that there's to expect any kind of continuity from them. So I can't necessarily blame them, but I also can't blame people who don't appreciate that because, I mean, what is wrestling without continuity?
Nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah, it's just a lot of action. It's just a lot of high-paced action, and realistically,
it's just noise. It's background noise.
You can see there's so many good wrestlers at this point that you can watch anywhere, and PWG is not the only company who knows who the good wrestlers are and is booking them all over the place. I mean, Christ, New Japan books insane caliber talent, you know? And it's just like, just watch that if you just want to watch action and not care about the storylines. Because, you know, a lot of the storylines in New Japan are real fucking basic to kind of essentially keep the same level of crowd engagement. If you only kind of come in for the big shows, you'll be busy enough. You don't need to worry about any other wrestling on the planet. So it's just, it is tough because I think PWG had a market. I enjoy it because it's local. I get to see a lot of guys that I want to see from that I see on tapes from other places. But that's why I'm not as hyped to go all the time because, you know, what am I getting out of it other than some really cool action, you know? Like, that's nice. But then we've got other companies out here now, PCW, AWS. They seem to be focusing more on booking some dream matches, some people from around the planet. And for me, for my dollar, AWS is bringing in guys that are more at the level of who I want to see. I mean, PWG didn't bring in Irie. I thought that was super cool getting to see him. PWG doesn't bring in any of the local talent that I think are really good. And I mean, AWS had Josh Barnett on their card. They had Shayna Baszler on their shows a bunch. They've had Lufisto. Like, they're bringing in a nice mix of talent from all over the place, and I'm more excited to see them.
No, exactly. And you have, what's that guy I love, you like a lot? I'm drawing a blank on what his name is. Santino's...
Tyler Bateman?
Santino's training school.
Yeah, yeah, the... Tyler Bateman, or are you talking about Brody King?
Brody King.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that guy would get over huge in the PWG, I think.
Yeah, he gets over huge in the crowds of PWG. He's been a fan coming to PWG for years, and it's sad because it feels like he's got no chance to ever get on the shows.
Yeah, I mean, the guy really impressed me the two times I've seen him live. I'm like, this guy, he seems like he's a big-time player, but
and he's just getting
neither
better.
Here or there. I'm not the booker, so... and you know, I'm with you. I've seen a lot of really good PWG shows, so I don't want to make it sound like I think it's all flying, but I have seen quite a few of it where it's way too many high spots and it just becomes overkill. And those shows still get great rave reviews because people love that type of style nowadays. And I'm more into the. I get more excitement out of seeing a guy work a limb or work a leg or work a back or. Tell me why, or a nice territorial brawl, or what have you. But PWD definitely has its fans. Dave is definitely clearly has shown that he's big into big spectacles and big athletic style. I mean, it's always been his thing. I mean, from Dynamite Kid to Tiger Mask to even Ric Flair, he's always been a guy who really pushes athletic wrestling. And that's his style. And the PWG really, I think it really narrows in on what Dave really loves. I mean, even before Ring of Honor became a big promotion, there was the APW King of the Indies show, which was the precursor to Ring of Honor. And Dave, like, I mean, if you saw Dave's star ratings, it's very similar to how he did it on the recent PWG shows. It's like, it was like the greatest show of all time and stuff. When he gets to see some athletic wrestling live, it's something he really enjoys. And that's, you know, that's cool. I mean, I'm just kind of embarrassed because when I first became a subscriber and started watching wrestling more of in a more critical eye, I try to base my star ratings on Dave. Like, I assumed as him as Dave Meltzer, I assumed he was right, I was wrong. And now, I mean, I've definitely outgrown that phase. That phase was like 10 years ago, 20 years ago. When I first started was probably, I think I started being a subscriber in 1996. So this was years ago. I think by 2000, I outgrew that phase. And believe that, I felt like you like, I mean, everyone has their own style they like and what you get into. And I find it really insulting, though, like Dave puts down other people's takes on it, because bottom line, it's all wrestling's just an opinion, on, especially on matches. And just because he's Dave Meltzer doesn't make his opinion worth even more. He just happens to have a newsletter that people buy into. It's almost like he's almost like it's almost propaganda at this point, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And the thing is, I mean, I made the comment to Trevor Dane from Throughout the Years podcast on Twitter as he was talking about this, is, you know, Meltzer was at the premiere shows. I don't know if you ever watched those on YouTube, but they're in Northern California, and they had guys like Tim Thatcher, Jeff Cobb, Tyler Bateman, Shayna Baszler at that time, Hudson Envy, Reyes, a lot of different wrestlers who are in the SoCal scene wrestled on those shows, and they did kind of a more athletic-based, shoot-ish style promotion, and he was there at those shows live, and he enjoyed them, but he didn't feel that he could go out and talk about those. And I'm like, well, is it the crowd? Is it because the crowd's not super hot that he doesn't buy into just how good the action is? Because I guarantee, like, the Tyler Bateman versus Jeff Cobb match from Premiere is just about as good as anything that you're going to see from Jeff Cobb and PWG, but he's given Jeff Cobb, you know, 5 stars in PWG and not on those shows, and not even talking about those shows, which kind of drives me crazy. But then I'm like, on the counterpoint, and I don't even know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but he's like now pushing this talking point that I've been saying for at least 2 or 3 years now. You've agreed with me that Ricochet is a damn fine wrestler outside of just high-flying, and you can see in his work just how good he is. But I almost feel like, well, it's great that Dave pushes that narrative, but now that he almost has no credibility because of the way that people look at his reviews of PWG and New Japan and all this, that, like, does it help or does it hurt Ricochet's case to have him saying that?
Yeah, good point. And I also found it was funny because I know, I've talked about how it seems like Ricochet is not a fan of Sammy Guevara. In the latest Observer, he put over Guevara's match really strong on PWG and said that Guevara could be the next Ricochet in Japan and in PWG.
I bet Ricochet really loved that one, huh?
Yeah, it's like, I love it because obviously Dave has, I mean, he was in that room for that interview. He had to have picked up the vibe that I picked up on. Have you finished watching that, by the way?
Get around to finishing it, unfortunately, but I do get that. But I'm like, now I'm thinking about it because I also listened to the Pritchard podcast, and he was talking about when The Rock was coming up, that as soon as Shawn and Triple H and Austin are talking about how he does this, he does that, he's annoying, he's not going to get over, that for Bruce Pritchard that was always a sign of when a young act was getting over, because the top guys were talking shit. So, in some ways, maybe Dave is smart enough to see that the reason why Ricochet doesn't like him is because he can see he's got a little bit of jealousy about him taking his spot.
Yeah, no, that's true, it's true. I just found it really fascinating, this whole entire thing. And, I mean, Dave just, it's just like, I can't believe so many people want to argue with Dave online about it, because it's just, to me, it's like a stupid argument. You're never going to win. Dave's not going to change his opinion. It's like, to me, it's like Don Quixote trying to tilt windmills, you know? I mean, it's nothing's going to happen. You're going to keep on going, doing the same exact thing as Don Quixote, and we know how that story ends. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I don't argue with Dave about his opinion online, because I don't argue with anyone about their opinion online. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't see him as any
Twitter's
different than anyone
else. Place for it.
Yeah,
Twitter is definitely not the place for it when you have X amount of characteristics and stuff. That's why you can be a Twitter warrior a lot easier. Like, you know, over at Pro Wrestling Only, the message board, I mean, it's become a lot more tame because a lot of more people are on Twitter now. But I mean, that used to be a real hot spot for detailed arguments and stuff. I mean, you still get some good ones here and there, but. I mean, most people, it's like, it's modernized. Everything's almost like wrestling. Wrestling used to be storytelling based, or good. A lot of it was storytelling based. Now more of it's a cheap pop or a fucking shortcut, and that's what Twitter is. You know, Twitter's become modern wrestling in a way.
That's actually a good way to break it down, honestly.
You know, yeah, you can be lazy because there's X amount of characteristics. Your time got cut, kid. And it's just fascinating about all that type of stuff. And then I'm hearing Meltzer on the talk about the Hall of Fame, said Edge is a better, it was a better worker than Nick Bockwinkel. It's just, it was just blasphemy. Blasphemy to me. You know, it's just, he's just coming. I mean, it's just like a guy who I still respect his, the guy's knowledge of history and all that. That's where I like getting the Observer. And it's like, you know, I've been an Observer, a subscriber since 96, maybe 95. I think maybe it's 95. And it's just something, even though I don't, I mean, it's so funny. I pretty much just cruise through it real quick. I don't even read the stuff anymore, unless he has history pieces and bio pieces, because that's where he's at his best, because he actually is the custodian of history, wrestling history in a way, and actually these pieces he does are usually fantastic, and but man, his match analysis, I don't need Matchbox cover reviews. You know, his analysis is shit. I don't believe in it. Very rarely do we see eye to eye on anything. We have two different takes on wrestling, and that's fine with me. But I'd rather him just focus more on the history of wrestling, because I think that's where his real bread and butter is at, instead of engaging these engaging people who, some people are seriously arguing with him, and then some of them are just bottom line trolls and stuff. But hey,
And I think even he gets that, because he said it on that interview, even in just the parts that I saw, that he said, like, to him, the star ratings and the match review is, like, the smallest part of what he writes, and he doesn't understand why in the past few years it's become, to some people, the biggest thing, because even he seems to put the least amount of focus on his match reviews than he does kind of everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird now. Like, you know, back in the day, the wrestlers really didn't like him. I mean, he had some that liked him, don't get me wrong, but there was a lot who flat-out hated him, and nowadays, it seems like the fans hate him more than the actual wrestlers, which is the wrestling business has changed. And I mean, a lot of these wrestlers, most of these wrestlers now aren't in it for the money. I mean, they're in it for the money, don't get me wrong, but they started out as fans. I think the majority of the wrestlers nowadays, I bet you 75% of them started out as fans, as opposed to in the 70s and 80s, I don't think the percentage was not even close to that percentage, you know? Yeah, I mean, back in the day, it was a business, and today it still is a business, but there's a lot of marks in the business themselves, and they care about Dave's star ratings, and because that was the most important thing to them, as opposed to the analysis of why people are making money, or why I'm drawing money. Why is this company drawing money, or what have you, you know?
Right. I mean, even with the like, kind of popularity of the Observer now, especially in the bubbles that we involve ourselves with, I think people, especially wrestlers, forget. I mean, Observer subscribers are, like, 1% of the wrestling fandom, if even that. You know?
And that same thing with Twitter, same thing with people on message boards. I mean, they're hardcore fans, you know, and they're definitely in the minority of what the audience is.
Yeah, and if you focus on the other people, and that's where you're going to make your money, you know. But
yep.
But I mean, more power to them.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, let's get into our show proper. That was just some stuff I wanted to talk about because it's been kind of timely, and I thought it was funny that Stutzy kind of started taking the ball and going after the PWG about storytelling, and I thought it was really poetic that he did it. Shows and right on the heels of the Rumble airing, so he really picked his point. He really picked a great spot to showcase how he envisions what pro wrestling is. Him and Grant, and they had an incredible Rumble. I'll let you start on it, man. What did you think about this thing?
Well, I thought it was phenomenal. I think it's definitely in that conversation for Match of the Year this year, which is crazy because I'm not a Rumble person, Battle Royal person, and I think it's almost weird to think of putting a Battle Royal Rumble in that conversation, but, I mean, it's hard not to. I think it's an easy 5 stars. I think that it's probably in the top 5 Battle Royal Rumbles of all time. The storytelling throughout was done phenomenally, with Trevor being number 1, and Rick Converse being number 2 was almost perfect. Really phenomenal choice of his number two, who sticks with him really long throughout, because just because of their history and because of Rick Converse's place in the hierarchy of CWF, they could...
Yeah, it's old guard versus new guard, you know?
Right, and they can work together, but they can also go against each other at the blink of an eye, and it doesn't affect anything long-term. I think there's some guys that you could put in there in that case, and them kind of fighting against each other a little bit too much here and there would, you know, turn the story of their relationship too much. I think even someone who comes through, and someone we talked about, Nick Richards, who I think some people may could have seen in a similar place, like, if you put him as the number two here, I think that the amount of time that they have to kind of go at each other affects just the fundamentals of their relationship as characters in the long run. And I think that Converse, luckily, because they're of different generations, because Converse, like you said, is the old guard, he can always attack Trevor, and Trevor can always feel the need to watch his back, and then they can stop and team up together because they've had that history as mentor-mentee in the past and all that. So I just thought it was really perfect to have that as a storytelling device. That said, as the match goes on, I mean, obviously there's some great interludes. I love the kind of big man interlude. That's probably the biggest part of the... probably the biggest interlude of the whole thing, when you start to get the Giants in there and they kind of go at each other until the point where Mecha Mercenary actually, you know, kind of dispatches Trevor for a while. And Trevor disappears as, you know, then we turn into the Hoss. Mike Mars comes in from there.
That's something I want to ask you about. Did you feel like Trevor did that really well? Like, when he needed to be the focal point of the Rumble, he was the focal point. And when he needed to... I'm not saying he needed to take a breather, but for let the other guys get their moments, he was great to take a back seat. You talk about the Hosses. Later on, he took a back seat, like, during the big angle with Chet and Brad Attitude. I thought he was fantastic at timing his like, powders, if you will, you know?
Yeah, and I think that one of them, you talk about the Hosses, I think that they structured this, and Trevor played his role perfectly for the kind of, I guess, the Hoss interlude is, like, I think for me is the, was like the B plot. I guess if you're going to break it down, like, the B plot of this Rumble was the Hoss interlude, and then you kind of go into the stuff with Chet Sterling as maybe like the C plot. But for me, I thought that, yeah, the Hoss section was great as Trevor powdered to give these guys a chance to set that up. And I think that they picked the perfect guys to tell that story with, because people love the big man stories. And I think that they did a really good job of having that plot line kind of climax with the return of Ray Kantrack, which,
right,
I thought was...
They did a great job earlier of that, is setting up Mike Mars as this monster, you know?
Exactly.
And he did a great job. They built him up real great in that few minutes. But then when Kantrack comes in, it's like the place explodes. It's on. And it's the legend Ray Kantrack, who we haven't seen since his retirement speech, which, people, if you haven't seen it, go back and watch it. It's incredible. And it sets up the table for Ray Kantrack. And you take it from there, man.
Yeah, and having Trevor have been gone already for a while at that point, I think really helped, because Trevor, you didn't want Trevor to overshadow Kantrack's return at all. So him being pretty much a non-factor at that point was perfect. As you talk about times where he disappeared, that was perfect. Then from there, you use Kantrack, kind of everything he's got, you give that, you transfer that over to Dawson, eliminating him, and then who comes out to eliminate Dawson? The Snooty Fox. So, I mean, just the chain of command. It's such a weird way to talk about it, but the chain of storytelling and the way that they made things... They built things and then paid them off in one match was perfect that way. I think,
and then you have like a guy like Cool J comes in the middle of all that, and just takes monster bumps and dies for our pleasure on that elimination by Kantrack. You know?
Yes, I know. Also,
here's like a little inside thing about Cool J, is that. They buried him all through FanCon, and with ribs and stories of all this stuff, where it almost made it sound like there was no way he's ever getting booked again. And so when he comes out, it was like a total shock, too.
Fantastic, yeah. Like, the way that he got shit canned to the floor was phenomenal. Just just amazing. And yeah, then you have, you know, Sharp coming in, and he doesn't want to give up his honor as being the Iron Man, even though, you know, I like that the commentary lightly points out that he did kind of get that in a nefarious way by handcuffing himself to the top rope to be stuck in the Rumble for the longest time ever. I thought that was great. Michael McAllister coming out and essentially showing off his new Fury fired up persona against Brad Attitude, who's like the number one shittiest heel in the company. I mean, I really do think that Brad Attitude probably is the biggest number one heel in the company, honestly. I think that, I think me and you both love Royal a lot. He almost, I don't know how to put it, he almost tweens a little bit. He's almost a little bit too likable. He's kind of that jock that, like, he picks on everyone, but you laugh until he's
too
picking
much
on
charisma.
You.
Almost too much charisma.
Yeah, and the way that, like,
well, Brad Attitude's charisma, and it's straight heel charisma.
Yes.
Royal's that guy you want to go out and have beers with after the show charisma.
Right, yeah, it's like I said, it's like Royal, I would laugh at him picking on other people, and I don't get upset until he's picking on me. And
yeah,
Brad Attitude
is so damn witty. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. I don't know if you could tell. I bought one. I got his shirt, the Planet of the Apes
shirt, nice.
Right? And the whole freaking building has Planet of the Apes shirts on. I mean, there's so many. He must have made a killing on this T-shirt. And he's the lead heel in the company, really. You know, pretty much.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, there's an argument there. Like, purest heel, biggest heel. It's just, it's tough. But yeah, so Brad Attitude being the one that McAllister gets to do that with, I thought was perfect. To kind of serious McAllister up a little bit, even though he gets pretty much eliminated instantly there. But yeah, big returns from legends. You got Yamaha coming back. Crowd pops huge for him because they probably thought there was no chance that he'd be showing up. You know, you can see some old timers in the front row who are really popping big because they remember him from way back in the day. So I think that's great. Yeah, and then, you know, Kane Justice getting to be the final, you know, number one and two, or I guess final two with Trevor, and they gave them time. I mean, they had probably over 15 minutes of just them two being the only two left in the match, really. And, you know, after the kind of abrupt elimination of Roy Wilkins, which I think me and you had a talk about this off air before, that it kind of seemed like getting rid of Wilkins the way they did, it was probably saving that big matchup. To be able to
especially
have,
when he gets revenge on Trevor by busting him open with the nuts.
Yeah, it felt like you don't want to give away too much of the kind of matchup between him and Trevor, so maybe that might be a big match coming up soon. Like,
yeah,
very
I don't
soon.
Think they wanted to have the heel. I mean, here's more like the banana peel type of slip because it was so quickly, and then he gets his heat back with the nuts. So it feels like they're saving this match because they didn't want to. Obviously, they didn't want to beat Trevor at the Rumble, and they didn't want to beat Wilkins decisively at the Rumble. So I think they're saving this match for. I mean, it could. I mean, they could do Battlecade, or it could go later on, or what have you. But I mean, they're definitely keeping this in their back pocket.
Yeah, I think they're keeping the match fresh because they're probably going to it soon. But yeah, I thought that Kane really upped his stock here for me. I think that losing the RGL title in the opening match, and then coming up to be number one and two, you know, the final elimination for Trevor, I think puts him over huge. And I think he really made it look good here. I mean, I know he didn't come out super late in the match, but he still can argue that he had a match before Trevor was able to beat him in the Rumble. And if he hadn't had that match, you know, he would have probably been able to beat Trevor. That's a great out for him as a heel. The way that he works, popping the knee out of the socket in the STF was fucking brutal, and I hear there's reports from the building about the knee socket poppage. Pete, would you like to report the findings there live?
It sounded like it was a shoot. He really popped his knee out.
Yeah, which is impressive.
And so the tough bastard popped it back in. I don't know how many of you guys have dealt with stuff like that. I've dealt with separated shoulders where I've ran my shoulder into a wall to pop it back in, and it's nasty. I've had a buddy of mine where I had to fucking grab his shoulder and pop it back in. That shit fucking hurts. It's a man's man thing to do it on your own, I'll tell you that much.
And back in and then keep wrestling, that's impressive. I've done plenty of stupid stuff. When you talk about shoulders, fingers, stuff like that, but the knee can be, I mean, that's everything. That's your whole base. So the rest of your night is going to be pretty difficult. But yeah, I loved Kane working over the cut, because even when it wasn't bleeding like it should have been, he's rubbing his forearm in there and he's biting on the cut trying to get some blood from Trevor. And at this point, I think Trevor's so dehydrated that his blood's so thick that it barely flows, which is just, it's almost more sick to know that he's got this this instantly clotted cut on his forehead because he's down to zero fucking electrolytes left in his body.
But do you think it changed the dynamic of the match a little bit? Because say Trevor's able to bleed like Magnum fucking TA or something, okay? And he's gushing, or Dusty Rhodes, or Ric Flair, or what have you. And he's bleeding and bleeding and bleeding, and Kane's attacking that cut. Do you think the crowd turns a little bit? Because then it became 50-50 down the stretch between Kane and Trevor. I can tell you, because I was in that audience, I was pro-Trevor to start the match and anti-Kane. But the way, because the blood kind of got dried up, I was able to get behind Kane, because it felt like Trevor's comeuppance was just being a bully. And Johnny P looks at me and goes, he's being a bully. I go, you know what? He fucking is. And I did change my dynamic and I started cheering Kane.
Very interested to find out if that was called almost on the fly, because the way that they worked, they didn't work a match that, to, like you talk about, would it have been heightened? Would it have been a different story if he was bleeding? Yes. But they didn't work in a way where I think that the blood would have fit if he was bleeding the way he was with the way that they worked. I almost think that they kind of called an audible and changed the formatting of what they did because he wasn't bleeding like that. Which I definitely could see that, because, yeah, this was not worked in a way that didn't lead the crowd to kind of get a little bit behind Kane.
Because Kane was doing everything humanly possible to get that damn cut going, I'll tell you that. Yeah. Much. I mean, he was biting it, but he was hard weighing that damn thing. You could just tell it. He was grinding on it. He was doing everything you possibly could to get this thing, get the blood flowing. And it started trickling a little bit more, don't get me wrong. But I think if it was like Magnum TA level bleeding here, I think Kane would have got serious heel heat. And then when Trevor makes his comeback, I think everyone would have been 100% behind Trevor and accepting of that ass kicking he was giving Kane, and just brutalizing Kane in a working way. I mean, in a stiff fucking working way. I think the dynamic changed a little bit because of the lack of blood.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. And let's talk about the finish itself. I mean, the mechanics of the actual final moment of the match. Trevor with this insane leaping double stomp on the apron that puts Kane to the floor, but Trevor hits the floor seconds later. I mean, within moments. It's just so impressive to pull off that feat. And you think about, Trevor has been in this hour-long rumble at this point.
Hour plus, yeah.
Yeah, and he's able to have the poise to pull that off. A really intricate finish. Super impressive. I love that Kane didn't take the handshake and instead took the chance to take a cheap shot and get that slap. That did fire Trevor up, and I think that was the point where, if Trevor had been a bloody mess and he's looking for even just, like, give me a handshake to before you put me away kind of thing, and the crowd gets behind that, and then that slap from Kane fires him back up to where he puts Kane down, I think you're right that the crowd would have been more 100% behind Kane. But again, as I said, I think they almost tweaked the match a little bit because it wasn't working out that way to kind of do it 50-50. I'd be really interested to find out the real goings on behind the scenes.
I feel like the handshake was an audible for sure.
Yeah. And I would definitely be interested to,
which is genius on Lee's part. I mean,
no,
totally.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is
okay. Cause if he's bleeding like a motherfucker, he ain't doing the handshake deal. I'll tell you that much, because that's out of character, and I changed it, and because the dynamic again would have been different.
Right, exactly. So coming out of it, Trevor Lee is, I mean, he's everything that we say he is. I don't know that too many people who watch CWF who don't hold Trevor in high regard. I mean, this guy is amazing. I find it interesting that on this long weekend with all of this interaction, I haven't heard a lot of stories about where Trevor was. It seems he wasn't involved too much in the FanCon stuff.
He was, I mean, Friday he was at AAW, wasn't he?
Right. He's definitely busy with bookings. But I think it does kind of help with his aura and his star power that he's the champ and he's busy around the world working all over the place. And he's not kind of just part of everything else that's going on. He's very obviously, and I think that the whole company sees it. And in some ways, I think Kane Justice might be lucky in this regard because as Trevor blazes this path, he sets up the spot for Kane. But I think Trevor's definitely going to be that guy who kind of goes from CWF and moves on to bigger and better things. You know, there's no way Jose, and you even got the Dawsons who dipped their toes in CWF. But I think Trevor's this guy who's definitely, he's got a big-time future, I think, just with how talented he really is, unless something insane happens or I'm just completely off base. But he cuts this post-match promo that really feels heartfelt and about how kind of he just doesn't know how much more time he has here, which is kind of interesting because there has been some talks about what does his contract status situation look like and what do a lot of people contract statuses look like right now as everything's really in flux. And I think at that point, after you've had this long, grueling, insane match for an hour long when you're just putting your heart and soul out there and this crowd is eating it up with a knife and fork and they're just into everything that you're doing, I don't know how anyone could be fake in that moment. Not even fake. I don't know how anyone could be composed enough to be putting on the character there. So for me, in that moment, I buy it 100% that you're getting 100% Trevor Lee in that promo. I don't know about you.
Oh, I totally agree. That was one of the best promos I heard all year, to tell you the truth. I mean, maybe I'm biased because I was in the building, but I thought that thing was absolutely tremendous, and it was like the exclamation point on an incredible event. I mean, that's all it is. I just want to touch on some stuff. One thing that got over really huge at the Rumble was Dr. Dan's elimination on the hoverboard. Tim.
Yeah.
That got over huge on Twitter, right?
Right. And I thought that was super great. I feel bad I didn't bring it up during when I was talking about it, but I thought that was great pretty much each time that he kept doing the hoverboard.
Yeah, he was pulling the curtain and they almost blew the spot. The ref grabbed the hoverboard and took it to the back. And I didn't look at the moose, but I'm sure Stutzy was like, get that damn thing back. Another ref was calling him. Like, bring that thing back. So that spot, they got the hoverboard back in place maybe 10 to 15 seconds before Dr. Dan got on it the first time. I thought that was cool. Because I was like, why? Because right when I saw him pick up the hoverboard, I'm like, well, I thought that'd be a spot maybe. And then I'm like, I guess not. And then I saw the turmoil. I'm like, okay, yeah, this ref, they didn't smarten him up on this one. He was just trying to make sure no one got hurt, which I loved. I thought that was really cool. Otto Swantz really impressed me in the Rumble when you're talking about the Hosses, when he instantly came in there and was dominating, immediately tackled Trevor down. Swantz is a guy physically impressive, and that's one thing you really you pick up being there live. A lot of these guys are big dudes, tall dudes. I'm a big dude myself, and where I'm not a guy who gets like intimidated by guys who are big because I'm a big boy myself. But a lot of these guys are a lot taller than they look. And Swantz, I bet you, was probably a legit 6'2", 6'3", real tall guy. He's a weird bird, I'll tell you. At the show, he's walking around with a shirt that said Otto Swantz on it with a black mask on. I'm just staring at him like, what the fuck is he doing? Because I'm captivated by it. And then later on, he comes by, the mask's off, and he thanks us for coming from so far away to see the show. Just a total weird dynamic type of thing. I thought that was cool. I loved the Andrews and Valiant coming in there and working as a team. I really do like them as a group. Now, who I thought got hurt in the Rumble was Nick Richards. Maybe because we haven't seen him since the Trevor thing, but it seemed like his reaction. You'll admit, Tim, I think you'll admit, right, that when Trevor and Nick Richards last wrestled, that crowd wanted Nick Richards to win that title, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question. We both talked about
it. And now here, it felt like he was just another babyface that failed. And the reaction we got was really lukewarm to him. At one point, they teased a couple interactions with him and Trevor. I really enjoyed that. But then when the heels started beating him down, it was all, let's go, Trevor, 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 Trevor. Even at one point, both heels are beating down Nick, and Trevor's just by himself, and they're still cheering for Trevor to make a comeback. Clearly, the loss, and it might be a loss combined with the haven't seen you in a while type of thing, kind of hurt Nick Richards a little bit in a standing. Because they heated him up really well going into that match, and then that crowd really wanted to see that title change, I think. And I think once they didn't get it, it kind of hurt his aura, and then he's kind of become just another babyface in the company as opposed to the guy who could possibly beat Trevor Lee. What type of reaction did you feel he was getting at the show?
I'm pretty similar in feeling as you. I think that there was definitely not the same kind of behind him that he had before from the crowd. I think also in this match, I think they kind of set him up to fail in being like a big return guy when you have Ray Cantrack as kind of your coup de grace big return guy, and then you've also got like the legend with was it Yamaha coming back as well. Like, it's like, well, Richards hasn't been gone the longest. He doesn't feel like the most important return. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it kind of hurts him. It's like the big returns. It's like, I think, I don't remember what year, but like the Edge return in the Royal Rumble was a big deal.
Yeah.
The,
you got to protect those, like having one big return type of thing. Yeah.
Right.
Having multiple ones, it lessens the impact usually each time. And like, yeah, like Yamaha is like, you know, they haven't seen him in like forever.
Yeah,
and
it's like if you compare
it. Kandrak, I mean, had that big retirement speech and stuff. We just haven't seen Nick Richard, where it's kind of like, you know, he just hasn't been on the radar in a while. And then last time he was there, he failed, you know?
Right. I was going to say, it's like the Yamaha return feels more like a Tatanka return in the Battle Royal, where he's just there. The Kandrak return felt kind of maybe similar to like a Mr. Perfect. Hey, we love this guy. This is going to be the one time thing, or maybe even like a Gold Dust.
Yeah, like a few years ago when he came in, it was like in the final five or whatever.
Yeah.
And it lasted a while, yeah.
And then, the Richards return really felt, I hate to say it, but it felt like just like, I can't even think of a comparison, but he felt like a guy who just didn't matter that he returned. Like a guy who it was like they were just waiting to return him, you know? Like,
yeah, and he's a guy I love. I mean, that Trevor title defense is my favorite Trevor title defense this year. And I just felt like, yeah, I just, the reactions felt like almost like a nail in the coffin for his big babyface run, where he failed. And once a babyface fails, sometimes that really hurts, and I honestly don't know if the company realized how, and I mean, talking about the FanCon, I don't think they didn't realize how hot Richards was going to get and how bad the crowd wanted it. So yeah, so this is just one of those things where it just came across. Yeah, I feel bad. I felt like it was a babyface that got cooled off a lot. And I really feel bad for him in that position, especially when you're there live and you're seeing the two heels kick the crap out of him in the corner, and Trevor's just selling in the other corner, and they're chanting for Trevor to make a comeback. That's not a good thing. I love Kazi coming in again, another type of return, And I love the fact that he picked up a business right where he left off, which was going after Nick Richards, and they had a legendary feud in the company. They had the, I think it was the show we started reviewing these shows. This was the show on the show the week before or 2 weeks before we started reviewing CWF Mid-Atlantic for the program here. And that was Kazi's last match at the time. And they had a brutal street fight. And so hopefully Kazi's around. Maybe he's back for a bit. And maybe we get another run with Richards. Maybe Kazi can help, get Richards back up in his place. Because there's nothing more than, a big-ass brawl where a guy bleeding like a motherfucker, stuck pig. So that'll get him over again, go back to his, what he's good at, what he's really great at, and that's brawling. So is Kazi. I thought Mike Mars got over big, like we mentioned earlier. I thought the assassin thing was huge. Kandrak had that aura of being a massive ass kicker, and that's something you can't. I mean, it's just, you either have it or you don't, and he has the aura of an ass kicker, and that was awesome, his return. Snooty hitting the big moves, and then again, they teased a little bit with Trevor Lee, which I liked. I liked the Lee attitude confrontation early on, and my gosh, just everything about this was fantastic. Kane throughout there was setting up stuff. I mean, I thought this was like a 4.5-star match. I know our friend Chad Campbell said it was the second best match he's seen this year, which says a lot. One of the things when Trevor and Kane, that was an epic 10 or 15 minutes, whatever it was. I kind of wish Trevor would have let, one of the big moments was Kane getting to tap out Trevor, but Trevor tapped out Kane first. I think I would have liked it a little better if Trevor would have tapped out. Kane would have tapped out Trevor first. But I can understand where Trevor's coming from. It's kind of like, he's the ace. He's the, the kingpin. It's like, hey, I'm going to put you over, kid, but I still need, I can't let you just make me look really bad. So I think it's like, I'm going to put you over and I'm going to tap out to you, but you're going to have to give me something in return. I think that was him tapping out to Trevor first. But I think I would have liked it a little bit more if Kane got the first tap. What about you? What about the tapping situation?
Yeah, I agree that probably Kane should have probably tapped out first. But, or not Kane, Trevor should have tapped out first. But I thought that Kane's tap to the STF, right? That was the one that he did first.
Yeah.
And he's tapping out when his knee gets popped out. I thought that they did a good job, especially with the knee popping out of place. And it didn't feel, he didn't milk it. It didn't feel like Trevor really got a chance to milk it. And I don't know if that was the plan or if because his knee had really popped out of place, he let him go faster than he would have. But it felt like he didn't milk that tap out, so it didn't have as much gravitas. Where I felt like Kane with the armbar and the ropes really milked that visual tap out to where I think that it had a lot more weight and will be remembered a lot more fondly coming out of it. Because for me, I didn't really remember Kane tapping out to the STF after the first watch as much as I did after having watched it the second time.
And you think about it, he also tapped out Trevor twice. He also tapped him out with a twist ending pretty much in the ring, too. So.
Right. So he got the cheap tap out in the ropes that wouldn't have counted, and he got like a legit tap out afterwards. And I felt like he milked both really well.
I totally agree. And I thought Trevor, I mean, totally elevated Kane, and my God, I mean, I don't know if you, have you seen the pictures of Kane and I on Twitter?
Oh, I don't know that I did, actually.
The dude, I'll send it to you in the chat, right? Instead of having to go look through it on my timeline.
No, I'll go look on your Twitter. I'll find it.
The dude's body is just hamburger meat, just bruised and battered. And you got to remember, this guy is a 20, 21-year-old kid. This guy, in 5 years, when he cuts a little bit of that baby fat out, this guy's going to be lean, mean. He honestly looks a lot like how Trevor Lee looks when he was a lot younger, Nick Richards. And he's going to get that body tightened up, and this guy is going to be a big deal, you know, because the guy knows how to work. It's kind of like the old Chavo Guerrero's father used to say, you know, you can be a star in this business, but if you learn your craft, you'll always have a place to work. And that's what Kane is. He's learning his craft, and he's going to know his craft. And then once he fills out into his body, gets tightens up the body a little bit, he's going to, you know, he'll be a player down the road, down the stretch. And
this guy's got it, and he's got it in spades. And looking at these pictures, I'm gonna give Kane multiple props back to back here, because I see him here with Papa Hales and with you. Yes, his body is just bruised up with nasty looking, just blood vessels busted all over in his chest from these chops. But number one, I'm gonna give him props, because if you're gonna drink a macro lager, if you're gonna drink a cheap lager, drinking a Hams is definitely up there in like the premium cheap beers, like cheap lager beers that you could find. So I'm giving him a thumbs up for drinking Hams. I'm gonna give him another thumbs up for understanding marketing well enough to both pictures. He's got that logo out in front. So if he's getting paid by Hams or by whatever company, he knows to show off that logo. So I'm going to give him double props for being a smart businessman and for choosing a damn fine beer there.
And I'm proud of that kid for taking that beating in a working fashion. I'll tell you, man, it just shows you what a tough kid he is. And, you know, Trevor Lee ain't going to put over anybody he doesn't believe in. So I'll tell you that, sir. So that's a big moment. But, man, coming out of this, there's a lot of interesting things here. I thought, you know, obviously they teased Lee and Converse early on. Of course, Lee and Kane. You saw some Andrews and Converse. I thought they teased that a little bit. Richards and Swan, so they teased a little bit. Of course, Lee and Richards, they teased a little bit. Mike Mars gets elevated, kind of like the Diesel. Kane obviously got the most elevation out of anybody here. You got Richards and they tease Richards and Kazi, Mars and Kazi. You might want to have Kazi work with the young guy Mars. Trevor Lee and Snooty, they teased a little bit. Kane and Sterling, they teased a little bit. Kane and Adler, they teased a little bit. And Lee and Wilkins, of course. And, you know, the Brad attitude and Chet Sterling, I mean, that was a big angle they played. Clearly, that looks like a Battlecade match they're going to set up. But the thing they also laid the pipework was when Brad Attitude was got eliminated and was about to eliminate Trevor, Chet came over and saved him. When Brad whipped the shit out of Chet, there was no Trevor Lee to be there because he was selling. That might be one of these, you know, we saw Trevor come out and congratulate him on his Weaver Cup victory. This might be the next, because this looks like the long con they're going here with Trevor and Chet Sterling, where Trevor didn't come out and save him. I saved you. Why didn't you save me? Type of, you know, heel psychology type of thing where you can see it coming. And then I liked how they set the seeds up there. I mean, do I know that's where they're going? I have no idea. This is just me speculating, but I liked the seeds they planted there. I liked the other thing. Like, you knew we all knew the All-Stars because the coach, which we didn't even mention, the coach's pre-match speech I thought was absolutely incredible. It was just like almost like a rally of what we're going to do to Trevor Lee. And he was like public enemy number one. I love that. I liked how they did it with the All-Stars. They had him come out 28, 29, and 30. Did they do it how we were expecting? No, not really. They did a lot of, they spun it around, and cause we knew we were going to make the All-Stars death row was going to be your final three. Was going to be, if Trevor Lee's going to win this title, you're going to have to face the All-Stars all fresh. So I liked that. I liked what they did with the Nux and the bleeding, and they can play into that. So I thought it was cool that we knew that was going to happen. But I liked how Mid-Atlantic, how they took us on the ride, and they gave us what we were expecting, but did it differently than we were anticipating. So I really enjoyed that. So much great detail to storytelling here. I thought everyone worked their tail off here. I'm so proud of what they did, and being live there was such a treat, such a treat. I can't put it over any enough. Did you see anything else I might have missed where potential feuds or potential things are happening?
No, I mean, not really. Nothing that I think is too, like, glaringly obvious that I need to point it out. Nothing that I can think of off the top of my head. So, yeah, no, I mean, there's stuff like what happens in the future with Kandrak. I think there's, like,
Kandrak was as a one-shot, or you think he's coming back?
I feel like I don't think he's going to wrestle again, but I think he could do something. So we'll see.
Okay.
And then I think that one thing that's an interesting note, just based off of what you said, like, it's very clear that Kane got the most elevation, or got the biggest elevation. I think that there's, like, I think that there's some argument, some interpretation room there, because I think that you could definitely say that Kane got elevated to the highest position coming out of it, but I think that Mike Mars may have gotten the biggest elevation going from nobody jobber to, I think, easily upper mid-card level guy coming out. So I think that they did a really good job in that regard, that they elevated two guys, I think, really, really well coming out of it.
I agree. I totally agree there. I think, I mean, for me, it's weird. I think for sure we're going to get Royal, and I feel we're going to get a Snooty in a flash flag match or something to that effect at Battlecade. Do you feel that's where they're going?
Yeah. I mean, something like that makes sense, I think. I think for sure flag match could be good. That's another thing I think coming out of here that they did a good job of is, you know, for us it was only a couple weeks ago, but for them it was probably months of laying the plan, but having the Nux match with Snooty and Royal and then having the Nux come back here was definitely great booking.
Do you give Kane a Trevor at a Battlecade, or do you give it to Royal Wilkins at Battlecade?
I don't think it's time yet for Kane as much as I want it to be. I think that, well, okay, so there's two sides of it. I think it is time for Kane, but I also think that Stutzy and Grant are not the type to rush booking, and I think that they think it's too soon for Kane to be pushed up to that level. So yeah, I'm thinking Wilkins, honestly, personally. I think that they protected that match for a reason, to keep it super fresh. I think that that's a big time match to still do. They already kind of teased some stuff off of the anniversary of when Trevor won the title, but I think that it's time to probably go back to that as a big time singles match now. For like a singles match for the big show. But yeah, I think that, I don't know how you do it, because I think that Kane Adler needs to be a really good feud, but I think that, I think Kane needs to win the feud, but not win the TV title, if that makes sense. Because I don't know that Kane needs to have the mid-card title for an extended period of time, but I also wouldn't want him to have the TV title for a short period of time after Adler just got it. Like, I don't want to have Adler have it for a really short reign to then just go into Kane having a short reign, but I also don't think that Kane should have the TV title for a long time, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. I think though we go Adler I think we get Adler and Andrews at Battlecade.
Yeah, I mean, that could definitely be it. I think that that could be a match that people get into, but I almost wonder if they don't do something else with Andrews and possibly Lee Valiant and maybe work into it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a possibility. I think going to Kane Adler, this is too soon right now. I think that's a feud a little bit down the round a little bit. For all I know, they might give it to us this set tonight on the show they're doing live. I feel the tag match. I think those will go with a last man standing match. That that finish sets up a last man standing. The more I think about it, because I don't think Stutzy and those guys would give us a finish that kind of comes across flat unless you're building to a last man standing.
Or Texas Death.
Or Texas Death Match, something to that effect. Because a wild brawl on the outside, well, a double count out would have gotten over more with the crowd than with the finish we got. Unless you're building it towards something where the guy's got to be up by the count of 10, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I can see that going there. Then they might go Kazi Richards if Kazi's wrestling again. If not, maybe Richards puts over Kane.
I don't know. I mean, I'm with you that I don't know if Richards has the equity to be even giving anything to Kane at this point.
I still think the crowd views him as a top babyface. But he's not in. He's not at the level of Trevor where he was a few months ago.
Yeah, I could definitely see it, but I don't know. I mean, if we're not going to Chet and Kane, or if we're not going to Chet and Trevor sooner, I could even see Chet and Kane in a singles grudge match kind of situation. Maybe
not a Battlecade.
Maybe even with the...
Not a Battlecade, though, right?
No, I mean, maybe we could.
I would assume that they're paying off the Attitude angle with Chet.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, actually.
Because Attitude doesn't work, like, regularly, you know?
Yeah, just going to work the big show, so if you're bringing him in here, yeah. Nah, that's got to be it, then. Okay, I guess that makes more sense. Because I was thinking about booking the title shot on the line... Kane versus Chet, and then, you know, Kane or Chet wins, but Kane does some bullshit at the end, and again, you play off of like, why isn't Trevor there to help him? But you can do the same storyline with Brad Attitude, yeah. And I think it works just as well. So yeah, that's for sure going to be what it is. And yeah, Brad Attitude can take the loss because he's not there all the time.
Yeah, and another thing I loved in the Rumble was how Ethan Sharp was talking smack, and they. Trevor Lee spared the shit out of him. I mean, I love that. I'm sure we'll have Sharp in a tag or something on the show. So, man, Battlecade's shaping up interesting, but I want to know who's going to be the Trevor's defense for sure. That's what I'm more curious about. But I think they did a great job laying the pipe work here at the show. And not only did they do a great job laying down stuff for the future. They hit a home run in the moment also, you know, which is sometimes it's tough to do. Sometimes you sacrifice a show to get to the bigger, get to another show. Here, they did it. They did a freaking a great show, and then they're just set up potential for the big go-home show in December at Battlecade. So super stoked about that. Want to offer CL Party a happy birthday or a late happy birthday when this show probably drops. I know her birthday was either today or yesterday. She's a total class act, and hope she has a great birthday. Tim, anything you want to add on the segment before we head out?
Before we go out,
go to
yeah,
break
I'm just,
anyway.
I'm just excited to again. I'm with you. I'm excited to see what they do with Trevor. I'm into CWF right now. Oh, I guess the big thing is. I definitely think that he would enjoy this as, you know, his perchance for nicknames and his perchance for this, but I think you just gave the perfect nickname there as you talk about laying that pipe work is Brad Pipe Layer Stutz with another knockout show here.
Exactly. Laying the pipe down. One other thing I wanted to mention, now I can't remember what I wanted to mention. Let me think here. I can't remember. If I come back to it, I will. If you can have the opportunity and CWF is if you're in the area in North Carolina, definitely get out to his show. And I'm also definitely want to see where Otto Swans is headed. We've seen him live in the Treat. He's such a great character. He kind of reminds me of like a Mark Lewin in a way. And that's a compliment because I think he's a Hall of Famer. They offered so much neat stuff here. I can't wait to see what all transpires at Battlecade and It's coming up. So, man, but I just want to put everybody over for the company, treating everybody great. Johnny P and Grant. And Jeremy Bryan. I mean, Grant was great. Stutzy was great. Johnny P and Jeremy really had a great fan con. And man, it was a great show. And I just can't wait for more CWF. I just love this company and the way they're doing it. And I'm curious on seeing if our predictions even come close to what ends up on the final page come Battlecade. But hey, on that note, why don't we take a break and we'll be
promotional
right back.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And we're back with some NXT action. And we open up with a Regal opening, setting up everything for next week and all this jazz. I will say the main event he sets up for next week just screams Angle. I'll tell you that much. I have not watched the spoiler, so maybe you can actually, if someone wants to tell me I'm right or wrong right now, but it actually feels like a big Angle alert happening. Do you need to get anything out of the Regal opening? I like how he plays off the Mean Girls, so I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it feels like there's going to be something there, but I don't know what it's going to be. We'll see. We'll see where it goes, I don't know how to put it. This whole thing has been just booked weird, like for the women's title stuff and everything coming out of it. So, bringing in the Mean Girls is good, but we'll see where they go from here.
Yeah, exactly. Then we get Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan versus Sabatelli and Moss. You know, Sabatelli and Moss kind of feel like they're like the young stallions of NXT, where that's not a phrase. That's actually an old tag team in the WWF who always put over the heels. Here they're the heels, so they're always putting over baby faces. And then they flipped the script here and actually had them win. I guess because Danny Burch isn't under contract. I thought I enjoyed this. And you know what? Burch and Lorcan make Sabatelli and Moss look really good here. And it's a shame that I kind of feel like they're pigeonholed. I mean, obviously, it doesn't matter with Burch because he's not under contract, but Lorcan is, and it feels like they've positioned him as, hey, you're the guy who makes other talent look better than they really are type of thing. What did you make of this?
I don't know. It took me a second. Maybe I was thinking of the Young Pistols because I was thinking of the Wild Southern Boys, but you're talking about the Young Stallions.
From WWF. It was Jim Powers and Paul Roma.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. I don't know if it was me or if it was you or if either one of us even said it, but a couple of weeks back, I think it was Gargano Moss. Did one of us mention that Moss is kind of has that Razor Ramon thing? Did you remember this?
Man, not me. Maybe it was you.
Maybe, but here I saw it even more when he does the fallaway slam, or as Razor Ramon himself likes to call it, the sack of shit slam, which always drove me crazy because it feels... I don't know why, because I'm not a wrestler, so I shouldn't care, but it always feels like weirdly disrespectful when it
to
plays.
Your opponent?
Yeah, but it makes sense because of, you know, his reputation for being a fucking dick. That he would do that, but when he threw the fallaway slam into the corner on, I think it was on Lorcan, and he popped back up, and he looked like Big Scott Hall. He looked like he didn't look like Razor Ramon, but he looked like, was it the Diamond Stud, or whatever, yeah, the Diamond Stud, the early Big Scott Hall Texan character that he played, kind of, because he's got the big, broad shoulders, he tapers down into the tight waist, which a lot of guys don't. Like, that used to be the pinnacle male physique, and it's not really anymore, it doesn't seem. A lot of guys are leaner now. He's really got that old-school kind of trapezoid body, and he's got that in-between size. Like, he had that match with Gargano that looked good with a smaller guy, but then he can work with bigger guys. So I think that, like, I don't know how into wrestling Moss is, but there's something to him. Like, I really do see it, and I think that he has a chance. It sucks that, you know, he crippled Kenta on that botched power slam. But, you know, he made jokes about it on Twitter. And, like, I kind of was like, oh, fuck that guy. I can't believe he did that. But then I stop and think, and it's like, as I talked about the sack of shit slam and, you know, Razor Ramon having this kind of reputation for being a dick, I'm kind of like, maybe that's the same thing. Like, while it was a shitty joke, he probably didn't, like, Kenta was probably in on it, or Hideo Itami, so it was probably, like, not really, like, a shitty thing to say, and he's just kind of needling, and it's just got, there might be something there. It's basically what I'm saying here, is coming out of this, Sabatelli, I got nothing. I got nothing for the guy, don't give a fuck. He's great body, great physique, he can hit some of his spots now without looking completely like he's gonna kill someone, but I don't see anything there at all. But Riddick Moss, there might be something there. I think that this guy, if he cares about wrestling, I think he can definitely put something together. Lorcan and Birch definitely felt like they're in a position, but I thought they looked good. I've always been a moderately ardent supporter of the argument that, like, just because you're new or just because you're, like, a new tag team put together doesn't mean that you should automatically beat, like, established stars. And so for me, it's like, even if they're not established, they're like an established team. So I'm kind of fine with them losing in a match against them because these guys have been teaming together for a lot longer than Lorcan and Birch. So for me, I don't get super upset about them taking the loss here. But I hope that they do have plans for them because I do think that they're two guys that they shouldn't be getting wasted, you know?
Yeah, they shouldn't be just putting everybody over.
Yeah.
I'm just afraid, though, Lorcan has always made a habit of putting everybody over. So I feel that's, like, his position in life. And now Danny Burch has latched onto him. And so that's what their job description is.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think of the Battle Royal?
I'm really happy that Nikki Cross has her own music. I think that this isn't the first time they used it, but I just like it because I hate the Sanity music. It definitely makes her feel like the bigger star of the group, though, for sure. I thought that the Battle Royal itself was fine. I think that they did a good job. I think watching it back-to-back with the CWF Battle Royal does it no favors.
No.
Yeah, and I think there's little stuff that Moro does that I don't know if everyone else... Like, I always feel like other people dislike Moro for different reasons than I do, but one of the things that he does in this match that's, like, one of the reasons why I dislike Moro is he does a kind of over-the-top, over-pronunciation. So, you know, there's the, what's her name, Tamara Conti, and he's, like, pronouncing her name like Conchi, and it sounds a lot more like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Spanish word for shell, but it sounds a lot more like that word than it does, like, the name that it is. And I've known people who have the last name Conti, and it's usually just pronounced Conti. It's not really pronounced the way that he's doing it there, so it kind of drives me crazy. The match itself was good. I thought that Cross was the star of it for throughout pretty much the whole thing. We talked about it during her four-way match as well. This girl just really, she's got something there. I mean, she really stands out. She jumps off the page.
Bianca Belair?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Bianca, I agree.
Bianca Belair as well looked amazing throughout her stretch.
Oh, who did you think?
I was talking about Cross, Nikki Cross originally. But then
I buy Cross. But to me, of all the dark horses, Belair kind of stood out the most.
Yeah, but then when Cross disappeared, I thought that it was really smart because it gave them a chance to have Belair look amazing. And they built her up in this match a lot. Because she got a big-ass stretch of her own that goes almost all the way to the finish. And she just looks great. That girl, Belair, is like obviously super green, but she's taken this to like a duck to water. I mean, this girl... Yeah. Has really put it together fast. So
like
yeah.
That hair spot where they were holding on to it, that could have turned ugly and been blown up easy.
Right, and I mean, yeah, she made it work. And then they used the finish to set up a four-way standoff in the ring with the belts, and that felt a little too cute to me, but whatever. The match itself, I thought, did a really good job of focusing on who it needed to, having people disappear for times, having other people shine, and they did a good job, but again, like, comparing this back-to-back with CWF, it's night and day, but it's not to say that this is terrible, it's just doesn't compare.
Yeah, exactly. Then we get a Drew McIntyre interview, and of course, Zelina Vega interferes. I mean, it's okay, but it just like, man, if that's the point, when well, then why does Cena almost just go ask for the damn title shot?
Yeah.
If that's the step, just go ask and you get it. I don't understand why we're dragging this fucking thing out. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I like that Drew says he's going on international press because I enjoy the idea of putting him over like he's a star, you know? But but yes, Vega, I like Vega, but she comes across to me like, I hate to say it, but she feels like an affirmative action hire. You know what I mean? Like, she's got that feeling of, like, she's fine, but she's not to the level of where they put her, and you almost feel like they're putting her there in a higher level because she's ethnic, in a weird way, and I kind of hate that. Because I will say
she's helped elevate Cien Almas. So.
She has, and it feels like the booking has done a good job of focusing on her more. But I hate that feeling. And it's not to say that it's true, but I just hate the idea that anyone could look at it and see it that way, instead of like having her actually feel like she deserves the merit of the level of where she is. Because that's not to say that she doesn't, because she actually has great poise, she talks really well, obviously has a great look. I find it weird that she goes to this interaction wearing like just a bra top. I would like her to be dressed a little bit more professional more often, honestly, because if she's supposed to be a manager, I want to think of her as like a professional manager. But who knows, because coming out of the angle in the main event, I don't necessarily know if she's being positioned as a manager, so we'll see where they go from there.
Yeah, well, I like her. My problem is with her and Almas, I don't like the way that... I don't know, it's a weird... I mean, she comes across like femme fatale dominatrix in a way, where, you know, she walks out in front of him, gives him, like, the finger to come here type thing. So, it almost... It's a little... I don't want to say weird, but, I mean, she's smoking hot. I mean, she told me to come, I would. But Cien Almas is a guy who probably has a lot more notches on the bedpost than I do. And probably does okay for himself in the clubs, where he doesn't need a girl to dominate him. Do you find their dynamic a little weird, though?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're doing a little bit of that, I guess, like, power play kind of stuff, I guess you could play out.
It feels like they're doing a little bit of, like, Katrina from Lucha Underground.
Right, which is, it's a little weird, but it's not, we'll have to see where they go, you know?
Yeah.
I can definitely see where you're coming from, and that's why I also say that I'd like to see something that tells me she has like business acumen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At this point, I haven't seen that at all.
I can see that. What do you think of the Aleister Black angle with Velveteen Dream?
I want to know who he was going to wrestle. No,
yeah,
I did.
Don't know.
Yeah, I liked it. I think there's some stuff about Black's entrance that they're obviously fine tuning, and there's some stuff I don't like. Initially, he kind of did that lift up into standing straight up, and he was stiff like a board and had kind of the hands on the stomach, and he kind of, like, presented himself popping forward, and it felt more, how do I say it, like, vampiric? He felt more like a vampire. And then now he's doing, like, an awkward kind of lunge forward onto one leg, and it almost comes across more like a zombie, if that makes sense. And I don't like that for what he is. Like, I liked it more that he came across more kind of dark cultish and occultish, like he was in control. And now, like, that awkwardness of the lunge forward onto one foot onto the side, this is a weird thing to pick apart, but I think that they might be, like, trying to overthink his presentation in a way that, to me, affects the overall presentation. That said, the attack was good, and the dream kind of being able to dodge the black mask I thought was good. And I'm actually getting excited for this match based on, as I've said, I've heard that the matches are really good, and I think that they've done a great job with the angles to make it also look like something that you should care about.
Yeah, I felt the angle was a decent angle. With that said, I feel no one believes Velveteen Dream is going to win, so I feel like he should have just totally laid out Aleister Black here going into the pay-per-view. So then at least when Aleister Black gets his win, it's a big moment, as in he gets his revenge and can go on, is what I think. So I at that aspect, I don't like it was cool, but then, you know, then he gets out, and then they make a big deal of Velveteen Dream escaping the black mask. But, he was tied up in the ropes, mind you. He had to get free. So they gave Velveteen Dream plenty of time to avoid the black mask. So I thought they overplayed their hand a little bit. I think I would have just gone all in with Velveteen Dream beating the crap out of him, maybe handcuffing him to the thing and beating him, and then leaving him for dead, and then at least Aleister Black comes back for his revenge and gets the win, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Just get some more heat on Velveteen Dream here. I mean, even with the point was, oh, he avoided Black Mass. In reality, I mean, Velveteen Dream, I mean, Aleister Black was in the ropes, had to get out of the ropes, and then through the Black Mass. So, I mean, Helen Keller could have avoided it at this point. So I don't think it was like that big of a... I don't think it was a big odds overcoming thing for Velveteen Dream.
Exactly. I think when you show that the best he can do is avoid a kick, even if it wasn't tied up in the ropes, that's not great.
Yeah, that's like you will be. Yeah, that you didn't win the lottery here. You said about what Morrow did. What Morrow bothers me about, I could care less about how he pronounces people's names, is he puts everything over the same. And so everything kind of has the same impact with Morrow. And I think it worked better for when he was putting over stuff that was like, you know, if you saw him on Access TV with putting over New Japan Main Event or something, then it worked because they were all, you know, really strong matches for the most part. Here, he gets more exposed on the hour television or 2 hour televisions when some of the stuff isn't as good as what he was talking about earlier, and he's got to put it over, and so everything comes across like the same, as opposed to nothing has higher stakes or less stakes in the Morrow Renaro world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. That with Morrow, everything is the same, so nothing matters, kind of thing.
Yeah, because his level of hype gets the same. He gets excited about it. A Nikki Bella elbow is just as exciting as a John Cena attitude adjustment or a Jericho, or a Lion Salt, or angle lock, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
What'd you make of Strong and Almas?
Great action. These guys really did a fantastic job. Loved Roddy. Working over the back early. Almas turns around with the mirror spot, dropping Roddy into the apron back first. I like that for Almas. I think that a lot of times mirroring wrestling stuff like that, like a guy is going after your arm and then the other guy attacks back on the arm, doesn't necessarily always work, but I think there's certain characters, certain heels particularly, that I think it works well with. I think Almas is a guy that it does work well with. He feels like a very petty, tit-for-tat kind of guy, so that works for me. They're obviously putting a lot of steam on the act for Zelina and Almas here. Yeah, I mean, the action is good. I think that I talk a lot about how much I love Roddy for his kind of action. Obviously, a lot of people like Roddy for his action, his high-paced, kind of over-the-top work as an overbearing heel was what really had him break out over the past couple of years. I thought here his underdog selling was done really well. Super impressive how he did that there. Really made almost feel like a big fucking deal. But then, I mean, it goes to the next level when Roddy starts to heat up. I think that as Roddy is starting to work into his comeback, that's where he looks fantastic. But they don't give him time. They cut him off perfectly with Zelina hitting the Rana off the top, sending him headfirst into the stairs. I thought that was just phenomenal way to do this. As soon as the fans get excited, as soon as I get excited, thinking that Roddy's going to go for his big comeback like he always does, they cut it off with cheating. And then Almas hits the hammerlock DDT and boom, gets the finish. And I think if this is how you want to put steam on Almas coming out of here, I think they did a great job as they even add even more with them going into the commentary booth and calling out Drew directly, saying tomorrow or next week, we're going to get face-to-face, and this is going to happen. So, yeah, I thought that that was great. You got Undisputed coming out next, and you got Roddy contemplating himself. If he wants to join, I think that, you know, that's a good job of teasing everything. So yeah, I really enjoyed this match for what it was as, like, an angle. But I think that right at the moment where I was, like, going to start getting excited, that's where they cut it off. But I think, as I said, I think that was the perfect time to cut it off. So I'm not even going to, like, be upset about that. I think that they actually did a great job by cutting it off where they did.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, too. I gave it a 3.5 stars. I thought it was good, hard-hitting action. I thought we got a fun shine for Roddy. We see Almas working the arm. I would have liked a more cheating move to set up the heat. But the big move worked for Almas. The Selena Vega Rana totally popped me. I didn't see it coming. I thought they camouflaged it really well. I thought the finish was really fun. And then we get some, you know, like you said, in the booth, and then the Undisputed giving Roddy the patch or whatever. It had some elements that was cool, and it worked. Roddy is he's kind of the backbone where he can't have a bad match in NXT at this point, whoever you pair him with. He's that good.
Which weirdly feels way. Exactly like what spot he's been in for decades in ROH.
Yeah, it does. I think that was the intention, was to sign him. I think they're still shocked that he got over as well as he did with the angle with Rude. But yeah, he's kind of a guy who they definitely have a cast system, and his system is mid-card, putting over people and kind of being a gatekeeper in a way.
He is Mr. NXT. It's Roddy versus the world, right? Or Roddy versus the universe. You know?
Right? Yeah. Oh, geez, yeah. And he's a guy, though, if for some reason they have a bunch of bums and talent-wise, he's a guy who, like, he can do whatever. He can work anywhere on the card. He's kind of like, I hate to say it because he's a much better worker, but he's like an 80s version of, like, Terry Taylor, where he can put him all, work him up and down the card, where he could have a good world title match with Ric Flair, but you know he's not going to win. He could have a great TV title match. He could be TV champion. He could be heel, babyface, be a tag champ. Yeah, he could just wherever on the card you need him. And those players are important.
I mean, it makes perfect sense because, while Terry Taylor was very famous for his perchance of using the N-word, I wouldn't say that Roddy would ever do that, but I have seen him say the F-word. So, you know, I mean, in some ways, him and Terry Taylor maybe aren't all that different.
There we go. Hey, on that note, why don't we close up? I thought the show was pretty solid. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was great, and it built to the TakeOver really well. I honestly hope TakeOver's coming up soon, because this felt like a good build to the show.
Well, obviously it is. Coming up in November.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, it's in Houston. And then we still haven't even teased War Games yet, have they?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, they have a lot of stuff to still build, too.
So, yeah, so that angle's got to be hard coming strong next week. On that note, why don't we take a breather, and we'll be back, and we're going to look at the future show that gave us the inaugural TV champion, I guess, for Powerbomb TV that's now on the Roku channel. On that note, we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Man, we're back. We're looking at the Future Show that just happened recently on the Powerbomb TV. It streamed last Saturday, right?
Yes, you caught me mid-drink on that one. Sorry. Yes,
it just happened. It was Saturday or Sunday. No, I think it was Sunday, wasn't it?
I think it was Sunday, actually. I think you're right.
Yeah, and it was the inaugural, pretty much, essentially, which I totally dig, is they had the finals of like the TV title tournament in a way, and they gave a TV title on Powerbomb TV, their streaming service. I think that's a really cool idea. What about you?
Yeah, it's something that I've heard people kind of talk about, like the idea for the WWE Network, right? Like have a network champion. And I thought, oh yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And it feels like Powerbomb has. I mean, for Powerbomb, he's the top champion, but as you talk about as a TV champion, I think we'll get into it. I don't know if we want to spoil it right now, but the winner does feel similar in vain to, like, let's say a Lord Steven Regal
TV champion. That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, so I think
as the heel, where he can, I mean, let's say it, if Jonathan Gresham wins it, he's working heel with Stokely Hathaway as his partner, as his manager. He's working in a heel style, like Steve Regal, who was one of the greatest TV title champions of all time. He's up there with the Arn and Tully Blanchards and himself. In my opinion, the top three of all time TV champ. You might want to throw maybe a Chris Jericho when he was a heel in that group. But man, Regal definitely had a legendary TV title run, and Gresham is very similar in the technical heel role,
Yeah, and a guy who can definitely work that European round style and really use if they do a time limit thing, he can make that work. If they don't, he can definitely do a 2017 kind of updated style of that heel work, which he shows off here on this show.
Yep.
In spades. I mean, and the guy is just, obviously one of the best, and it really makes me happy to see at least somebody realize just how good he is and pay some homage to his level of skill.
Making him the face of Powerbomb TV, I think it's smart. I mean, he's not the guy, he's not like Matt Riddle, where it costs an arm and a leg to book him, So he's a guy, and he's on Ring of Honor TV, so he gets that exposure. So, you know, making him the ace, I think, is a very good decision of all the people they can make, you know?
Yeah, and I think he pops up in enough places, but he also feels special enough because he's not everywhere. That he's a guy that you can definitely get behind.
He's still a fresh face in a way.
Yeah, he works with enough promotions that you can work stuff out to get these defenses on random shows here and there that end up on their network, which is good. You know, he keeps within the company line. He's like the perfect guy. On top of the fact that, like I said, I think he's a... I mean, unless you just don't pay attention at all to indie wrestling, I think that it's really showing about, like, what your appreciation level is of wrestling if, like, you don't have Jonathan Gresham preeminently in your top 25. And that's, like, being nice for people who don't pay attention to the indies as crazy as me and you do. You know right. what I mean? But he's a guy that if you're, like, ancillary paying attention to independent wrestling in the year 2017, since like the year 2015, and even probably even further back, he's like preeminently in that top quarter of talent. I mean, realistically, he's always fantastic. So,
and I think this has been his most quiet year in the last three or four.
Right. Yeah, I know, that's for sure, because he's definitely had some better exposure in WXW, 01. Also, he's showing up in ROH here and there. So, yeah, like, totally. So, like, on top of everything else that we said where it just makes sense for business, it also artistically makes sense because he's just a phenomenal worker.
Yeah, and Powerbomb TV is aimed towards the hardcore. It's not your casual fan who's buying a streaming service, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing about Powerbomb TV. As much as, you know, you can say whatever you want about this show, even this show, because as we break it down, I think we'll both have, like, some negatives to say. Like, there's no argument that this is not made by fans for fans, you know?
Exactly. All right, let's get to the show. The first thing I'm noticing is the building. You know, if you're streaming an iPay-per-view, I'm not expecting, I know we're on an indie level, I'm not expecting the buildings to look great or anything. But, man, whenever I see the blue tarp, that to me screams low budget, just crap. I mean, it says construction when right. I see a blue tarp. I thought this building looked absolutely terrible on live.
Yeah, and I agree with you. There's some...
I'm sure they got it cheap or free or whatever. Right. But, man, presentation still, you got to have some form of presentation. If it wasn't streaming live, per se, I don't think it bothered me as much. But because it was a live presentation, you want to make it seem a little bit more bigger of a deal than the tape stuff you can watch anytime. And, you know, once it airs live, you can watch it anytime on Powerbomb TV. And it's on the Roku now, too. But when you're airing it live, it just kind of... You know, if you're watching it with a casual person, those type of things kind of can be a turnoff to especially to a casual wrestling fan.
Right, and I mean the attendance looks sparse. There's some areas where the ceiling looks pretty bad, and you know I understand how the camera work just has to work, but you would really hope that they could do a good job of just kind of not showing you certain stuff. I think that the presentation and the building itself definitely left something to be desired, that's for sure. But you always hope that, you know, the action in the ring is going to be what really matters.
Right, I agree. I totally agree with that. But if you look at it, I mean, we just reviewed CWF Mid-Atlantic. I mean, that place looks great on YouTube. Scenic City looked freaking fantastic, and it's a high school gym. But, I mean, it looks... so much nicer, you know. We've watched PWX. It just looks really nice. We've watched a lot of stuff on the High Spot Network. Very rarely am I just like, man, what a shit building, man, where I need to get a tetanus shot after I've sat there type of thing, you know?
Right. I felt like I needed a tetanus shot after watching this one, so.
Yeah. All right. Enough of me bagging on the building. And I'm sure that there's reasons behind it. I mean, I'm not the guy who's opening up the checkbook, so if you can get a cheap building, I can only understand saving $500 or $1,000 or $2,000 on rent or what have you. But then we got opened up with Dante Calabero versus John Skyler versus Rayo. One thing I like about these live things, which I think is cool, is that you get a bunch of different talent from different promotions all on one show. So you kind of get a melting pot of what Powerbomb TV is. But what the flip side of that is, because it's a melting pot, the show really didn't have a true identity besides crowning a new TV champion. So the show, it didn't really flow well for me. What about you overall?
I'm trying to remember who it was, and I actually think it was Jesse Jackson who said that America's not a melting pot, but it's a vegetable stew. And while everything works together, it still has its own kind of form, and it still stands out as its own thing. So it feels more like that here as, you know, the match itself. I mean, Skyler is obviously John Skyler. Really, I think we're both moderately high on him, but
yep,
I feel it's,
where I'm happy if he's on a show I'm watching.
Yeah, but I feel sometimes, especially in this setting, he felt a little bit overbearing on the other two guys. It felt very obvious that he was going to win. And some of that just feels, I don't know, like it didn't really ruin the match for me, but it did affect it. I thought that Rayo looked fine. I don't even remember the other guy's name, and I hate to say that. But
Dante Calabrero.
Dante Cabrero or Calabrero. Or, yeah, like I said, good stuff, good solid action, but like 2.25-star max for this match, honestly. And I just felt that Skyler really outshined and kind of overbeared on the other two guys. That's not something that I should hate on him for, but it did feel like he could have put some effort to make them feel like they came up to his level at least slightly.
Yeah, I would start at 3-4. It just seemed like, it was solid, and then they worked hard. Three ways just sometimes are difficult to pull off, and here it did. I did like the finish, though. But it was just a little off for me. Then we get Tracy Williams versus Red Eagle. I enjoyed this one. I liked Williams on the arm, transitioning to the head, fun grappling. Eagle focusing on the leg. Red Eagle I thought when he did the dive was pretty cool. And then getting the knee bar, I thought was tremendous looking. It was a nice shine for the Eagle got there, but it was okay. 2.75. Kind of felt more like a style clash in a way. But that's where you're going with it. You're getting some luchadors, you're getting mat workers, you're getting brawlers, you're getting a melting pot of workers again. And this one, Hot Sauce is a damn good worker, and it's the first time I've seen Red Eagle. But for what it was, I thought it was solid stuff. What about you?
Yeah, and it's not to say, like, as you talk about Styles Clash, like, I think that Tracy Williams can work a more lucha-based kind of style. I know that he can, but I think that the Tracy Williams character at this point doesn't necessarily lend itself to working with a lucha guy. That said, I did see Tracy Williams calling out Red Eagle on Twitter, making it clear that he thinks that anyone who would be, you know, dumb enough to make their name based on a color and an animal is obviously an idiot. And if you want to understand why that joke is funny, you can ask Joe Lanza on Twitter why exactly that's a funny joke for Tracy Williams to be making. That said, it felt a little too... Again, you talk about Styles Clash. It felt a little too much like they were kind of lending themselves on that Styles Clash idea for the story of the match, that you're playing off the fact that Red Eagles was kind of trying to spend too much of the match trying to counter-grapple Tracy to show that he could keep up with him on the mat, while I think that it would have been better off having Red Eagles, when he did have his chances to shine, to kind of show off lucha style or a high-flying style, to be a counterpoint instead of trying to show off that he could keep up with him in the same style. Coming out of it, I'm similar to you, but I think I'm a little bit lower. I'm like 2.25, 2.5, I think, probably. thought the match was fine, but yeah, I just I think the Red Eagles should have had something to dominate in instead of trying to show that, like, I can also do ground wrestling. He should have, like, shown me that he could shine better at something.
Now, one thing I did like is I liked how these first two matches were pre-show matches, supposedly. I did like how the announcer announced the matches from ringside as opposed to being in the ring. But when the main card started proper, then he was announcing the matches in ring. Because actually one of my notes earlier was like, why the hell isn't the announcer announcing the matches in the ring? But he did. When the show started proper, he started calling it from the inside the ring. So I thought that was a nice touch in a way to differentiate the two. What do you like about the next match, Johnson Gresham versus Fly Warrior?
What I liked the most was Gresham. I mean, the leg work, the knee work, I thought throughout the match was good. I thought Fly Warrior looked fantastic with his selling, especially his facial selling, even with the mask on. I think he was over the top. I thought when Fly Warrior had the chance, he showed off his what high flying he could do. But I think that the leg work and the storytelling there made sense as you go down it, and Fly Warrior is not able to keep up and do what he can as a star there. So I think that while I talked about the Lions, Tracy Williams match was missing that kind of counterbalance, I think that they did a good job here mitigating that counterbalance as Gresham kind of actually did work to keep Fly Warrior grounded. Loved the finish with Gresham locking in that leg lock with this very smug look on his face when he gets the win and he has to get untied by the referee. Altogether, I think I gave this 3.5 stars. Really thought that it was a really good showing from both guys. And I'm going to just do a little bit of a, not really spoiler alert, but a little bit of a spoiler for what I thought overall is that I think that this probably should have been the finals of the tournament. I understand the idea that people don't want it to be too obvious that you're building to a specific match for the finals of the tournament, but sometimes I think that you really want to make sure that your main event delivers. And I think that if you had saved this to be the main event, and this had been a big deal for the title, I think, and you give it a little bit longer, this could have felt like a much bigger, more satisfying tournament final match. So yeah, I think overall, good stuff, but I think it would have been better showcased as the main event of the whole thing.
Okay. I kind of disagree there, but I thought I enjoyed the main event more than this match. I like both of them, tell you the truth. But I think Joey Lynch just has more cachet, and I think they view him as a bigger star in the South.
In the South, yeah, but I don't know that this show was ran in the South, because it really felt like this crowd was not familiar with him or his brother on this show. So, for me, I get what you're saying, but I think this show wasn't...
I thought this show was in Atlanta.
No, it's in Pennsylvania. It's in Old Forge, Pennsylvania, so...
Oh, okay, yeah. So then I can understand your point. Okay, now I can totally buy your point, and it's a valid point. Even though I still thought the main event delivered. I like this match too. All the same points. I give it 3 3/4. So, and I thought this reminded me a lot of the Malenko Ray Jr. Ray Jr. Malenko matches where Malenko would keep Ray grounded and then he'd give him a couple high spots here and there. I thought Fly Warrior's selling of the leg was tremendous, where he treated it like he was... every time he tried to make a movie, like someone would shoot him in the leg. I really can't put over Fly Warrior enough for his selling of all Gresham's leg locks and stuff. Really good stuff, though.
Yeah, and you make a good point there, which I may have kind of flown over, which is that Fly Warrior's selling was phenomenal here.
Yeah, I mean, because Gresham could do everything in the book, and again, if you don't sell it, it looks ridiculous. Not ridiculous, but it doesn't work, and I thought they did a good job. Joey Lynch versus Deshaun Pratt, I thought it was okay. I thought Lynch's strikes looked great. Solid match. It just wasn't fantastic. It was good, solid wrestling. 2.5 stars. What about you?
2 star, and I agree with you in some ways. I think that this match also suffered from, it should have gone on before the other match. I think that this match really paled in comparison to Gresham versus Fly Warrior. in that it was a really similar... They're trying to tell a similar story with a flyer and more of a ground-based guy, or at least a guy who was working some ground-based offense, and it just came across more spotty with a lot not as well selling, not as good selling. I think they would have been better off going and just going 100% spot, with both guys playing off of their high-speed, high spot-based offense, and it would have made it stand out more. But because you had stuff like Lynch working over the shoulder and arm, which then turned around and meant nothing throughout the match, I just thought affected my enjoyment. I think that, yeah, Deshaun Pratt is a guy... Is it Pratt or is it Plath? I think it's Pratt.
Right.
Deshaun Pratt, Omosis, is a guy that I was a big fan of when he was working that other gimmick in... Oh, I guess... No, I think everyone knows who he is. He's Omosis. I'm allowed to say that one in public. I liked him a lot in Omosis, I was hoping for more here, and I just think he didn't deliver. And like I said, I think that there was some really good arm and shoulder work early on that just completely disappeared by the end, and that just affected my enjoyment of the match overall. And like I said, I think that if this match had gone on before the other match, it probably would have been fine, but having this match go on after really had it kind of stand out as being not as good.
That's true. One thing I did like on the program that I didn't mention earlier was I liked how they gave each of the TV guys a little bit of like some background on them real quick before we got the final four. What did you thought about that video package?
The production was fantastic, and they did little vignettes. Yeah. They even did the comedy wrestling vignette that I loved. Like, they did a lot of really great vignettes throughout that really made everything feel bigger and more important. So I think they did a great job there.
Cool. What do you think of John Silver versus Puma King?
I didn't think much of it, honestly. I'm a John Silver guy. I like John Silver, but this really... You don't talk about Styles Clash. These guys felt like they were definitely speaking different languages throughout the match. There was some sloppiness and some botching that felt like it didn't need to be there, but it just came from two people who really didn't understand each other. Puma King... I hate to say this because... It's not meant to be racist, but it's like slightly is. There's like a certain breed of like machismo Latin guy that comes across like just a complete fucking dick to me. And Puma King came across in some ways like that to me. He's supposed to be a babyface, I think, but maybe he's supposed to be a heel and it just worked. But to me, if he really comes across just like an asshole, just the way that he's working throughout the whole thing. Like I said, John Scott is a guy who I normally really like, but I thought here he had some issues. I really felt like this match was lacking any kind of narrative. Most Skylar matches have been really good about that lately, too, because I think a lot of people understand or have understood his character, especially in Beyond, where he's the big-time focus, just exactly what they're supposed to be trying to get out of him, which is that he's, you know, this pint-sized powerhouse who's like he's an underdog while also being an overdog, which is a kind of a fantastic character that he's able to work really well a lot of the times. But I think here, because there's some nuances to that that's not normal in most wrestling matches, I think it's hard to just kind of plug and play John Silver's character into just a random match. If you don't understand that you have to like layer the selling and the way that stuff works properly here. So I think that really affected the match a lot. That said, with everything combined, I probably still have it at like 2 3/4 because I thought that there was some good action here. But I just felt like it lacked in the normal depth that I expect from, this is weird, but John Silver is a guy who I actually have pretty high expectations of. So when his matches aren't kind of upper level, I do get slightly disappointed.
Yeah, obviously you talked a lot about a pretty crappy match. For a while, I was not a fan of the match. Yeah, it didn't work for me at all on no levels. It felt definitely a communication breakdown, and I was a little tired when I was watching this, so maybe I didn't give it a fair shake, but it really didn't do anything for me. Then we get Eddie Kingston versus Matt Lynch, and I like both these guys, and I thought they had a pretty trepid brawl. You know, I thought the promo was very believable, what Kingston did. But then afterwards, I thought the match was okay. Never really got to the hatred level. I'll give it like 2 stars. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I am very close to you. I'd probably actually give it like 1.5 star. I loved the promo, but I hated Kings. Like, fucking Matt Lynch comes out and says, I'm going to accept your challenge for this match. And then Kingston's response is like, that's kind of disrespectful, but whatever. And I'm just like, all he did was answer your challenge. How is that disrespectful? You know, like that kind of stuff can just really fucking piss me off. And when you talk about a brawl that really feels like it's just being wrestled inside of a vacuum with no emotions at all. I mean, there's no emotion coming from the crowd because I think half the crowd thought that Matt Lynch was actually just a fan that ran into the ring. While the other half of the crowd that actually knew who he was didn't give a shit about him. It really affected it a lot. Eddie Kingston is a guy who I feel like he should be on your list. How do I put it? Raw talent and promo ability and just size and
aura.
And everything about Eddie Kingston should make him like, you know, the modern day Kento Kobashi. But instead, he's this like fucking middle tier IWA Mid-South like semi legend. You know what I mean? And it just, I don't know what it is about him, if it's just like a laziness factor or what it is, but the guy should be a fucking legend in the history of wrestling, and he just doesn't bring it the way that he should to deliver on all the tools that he has going for him. This match was like kind of a culmination of all of that, just showing that when this guy is not fully committed and invested in something, he really dogs it. And I think that's why he doesn't ever hit that level of a top tier guy.
Okay, that's fair enough. I've liked him, yeah, but there's something. I think part of it, doesn't hurt him, is that he has a tendency to burn bridges and tell people how he feels. So that really doesn't help when people want to work with him. And if he tells you, I hate you, I think you're a piece of shit, you're not going to put him over to the best of your ability either and stuff. So, he's kind of his worst enemy sometimes. Then we got Ultra Mantis Black versus Orange Cassidy. What do you think of this?
I feel like you didn't like this match.
I absolutely hated this match.
Okay.
Give it a dud.
I loved this match. I loved it. I loved it for what it was. It was like in the wrong spot because it came after intermission. Because this match should have been intermission. You know what I mean? Like, it's comedy fun. The crowd gets into it. Lots of like funny action. Then it breaks down into a wild-ass brawl with Ultra Mantis Black just showing off his sadistic side. And I think if you are invested in these characters, you enjoy this match a lot more. If you watch this cold, I can definitely see why you would fucking hate it. But this is one of these ones where, like, I could go as high as giving this 4 stars. You know what I mean? Because I'm invested in these guys.
Because I hated everything about this.
Exactly.
I'll take it as the cold, being cold to it, but the stop starts and
yeah,
3 finishes. Yeah, I fucking hated this thing.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I could go that high. I don't go that high. Like, for me, I go like 2.5 star. Like, fine for what it is, and it's fun. It serves its purpose. But if you really enjoy it and you're really invested in these guys, like, this is just great stuff. But watching it cold, it's trash. It really is. So I'd like to hear your take on it, Pete.
There's not much to it. I just had a visceral hate to it. I mean, I was like, couldn't believe I was watching this shit on my television. It was just garbage. I've never been a big fan of either one of the guys, so that might have something to do with it. And then on top of it, not being engaged, not liking what they're doing. I hate everything about the Orange Cassidy character. And then to see this thing, I despised it. But then the next match I enjoyed. Baron Black versus Brute Van Slyke. I loved Van Slyke. I liked the Brute. I thought Baron Black's gimmick was kind of cool. I liked Brute's early offense, very Haas-oriented. I liked Baron working the Shine here, and I like how he's using his cape and stuff, and so that was cool. Baron's work I thought was very smart, going after the arm. I thought Vance Like's headbutt cut off was just awesome. Though Vance Like's I should have done it, but it was something that was off. But I liked aspects of this match. It wasn't a great match, but I liked a lot of pieces of this match. I gave it 2.5 stars. I want to see more Vance Like for sure. Because he's that type of guy. It felt like a kind of a throwback type of heel, even though the crowd was totally into him as a babyface. I enjoyed it, though, enough. What about you?
I also enjoyed Vance Like quite a bit. I thought the Black Baron, he was there and then he wasn't there at times, if that makes sense. I thought that he brought what he needed to, but he also doesn't seem to understand even who he is, which affects my enjoyment of his matches. I think he's in a transition period as a wrestler. He needs to figure out exactly what character he's portraying, and then I think he can definitely bring a lot more. That said, I'm with you. I thought there was moments in there, Vance Like, you talked about the double arm. I think it was a double arm suplex, or it might have been a double arm powerbomb that Vance Like hit that felt like it should have been the end of the match. But, you know, you got the title on the line and you have to tell the story. So they get the kind of title belt involved and they have to do the fuck finish. So, yeah, I mean, 2.5 stars feels fair. I just feel like for some reason, even though we give it the same rating, it seems like you're more positive on it than I was.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think we both come down on it in the same way. So,
Know, weird. I think we took two different routes to get to the same destination.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think of the Jordan Grace match?
I'd almost rather not talk about it. I like Jordan Grace a lot, but I thought that this match was just tough for me to get into, honestly. Jordan Grace looked good with her power spots here and there. I don't even remember the name of the person she's working.
Jamie something was
fine.
But it was a dude, right? It was a guy, right?
I don't know what gender they identify as per se. Especially even like for wrestling wise, I think this might have been a women's match. It also may have been intergender. I'm not sure. I like Jordan Grace a lot, and I think that she does really well against like other people.
This way, there's plenty of other great, good, really good Jordan Grace matches out there to watch. This wasn't one of them.
Yeah, everyone go watch a bunch of really good Jordan Grace matches and don't watch this one, unfortunately. But then from there we go into, I guess, the main event, huh?
Yeah, and it's John Gresham, Joey Lynch. I like this. I gave it 4 stars. I like the early grappling. Love Gresham destroying the arm. I love the straight punch to the arm. I thought that was just great because in reality, that hurts the arm. It's sore as fuck.
It felt like a dead arm. Have you ever played dead arm?
Yeah,
like,
yes, you have a brother. Dead arm, exactly.
Yeah, it looked like, to me, it looked like he just did dead arm straight up to him. I thought that was great. Yep.
And then he hits a suplex on the arm. That was a really nice touch. Love Gresham going back to the arm. Lynch, I thought, sold it really great. I thought... And what made it work was I thought they gave Lynch enough hope spots to make it believable, and then Gresham kept cutting him up and gobbling him up, which I really enjoyed. I thought they worked well together. What about you?
Yeah, I thought they did a fantastic job together. I'm right there with you at 4 stars, honestly. I thought that it was interesting that we had Matt Lynch not there at the beginning of the match, only to show up and then not really play much into the finish other than the tease with Stokely trying to tell him to throw in the towel. You would think that why would you have the brother manager situation kind of not be there then to show up in the middle for no reason. The big jumping single stomps from Gresham They were used in the Fly Warrior match. They were also used here with the arm stomps. I thought were done like insanely well. There was a moment where Gresham flips back into an insanely tight locked bridge while Lynch is not doesn't have his shoulders down in any way. And I think a lot of places that could be a stupid comedy, oh, look at this botch. Gresham worked that shit like a fucking man. Where he, after the ref is like, listen, he's not pinned, I can't count anything. Gresham stops, he recalibrates, and he gets up in the ref's face, like, why are you fucking with me? In a moment where you know, like, he was wrong. But because he's a heel, and because he's just intimidating the ref, he made that work. He made it so much bigger than just a ha-ha comedy. He was trying to pin a guy who wasn't actually pinned. It was, like, menacing. And it was ruthless. And I was just like, God damn it. This is why talk about Gresham as a top-level worker. Is he's not just working while he's in holds. He's working with his mind in every fucking moment of every match. What would you do in that moment? You know, he gets up in the ref's face and he's like, what the fuck? And he's just, yeah, I mean, the finish was brutal. The arm work was genius because it leaves Lynch free to use his flying game, coming off the legs, like, with different dives and all this stuff. Like, so, to me, I thought that just great work, easy 4-star match, probably even higher, honestly. Just, yeah, I think great way to crown your champion. You come out of it, you've got the big group with the dream team. The finish itself, like I said, with just the hammer fists over and over again from Gresham, as he's just... Gresham, really underappreciated for a facial worker. The way that he just comes across like a sadistic asshole is amazing. He always is in character at all times, from every bit, from tip to tail, as they say, from top to bottom. Gresham, you always believe, is 100% invested in everything he's doing. He shows it off here. The guy deserves the belt. The guy deserves the big, you know, recognition that he's going to hopefully be getting from Powerbomb TV, from all of wrestling going forward. Because, yeah, he did a great job here. Joey Lynch served his role super well. Selling was good throughout. You definitely wanted to get behind Joey Lynch. You felt bad for him throughout the show, throughout the match. You just wanted to see Joey Lynch get his chance, but Gresham is just too much, willing to take kind of every underhand tactic that he can get, as well as just being a really skilled grappler. So I think that they did a fantastic job here.
Now, the one thing, we end up with the new dream team of Skyler, Gresham, and MGF. The one thing that scares me here is it feels like they're positioning Gresham as the ace of this group, right? The lead.
You would hope.
But it feels like MGF could easily overshadow him and become the man of the group.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, MJF is like this really, really overbearing worker right now. I mean, the guy has got, he's got charisma, he's got a great body, he's got really good work, he's a fantastic on the mic, and Gresham just doesn't have all of that. So I can definitely see where you're coming from.
So it almost like, I mean, so you always get nervous when you do all this work to get Gresham elevated, and they did a great job and get that, and then the final product is the three of them, and it's like, okay, how long is it going to be last until MGF moves into the ace role between this group? But we'll see. Overall, I'd give the show a thumbs in the middle. I thought they did a great job in elevating Gresham, did a great job in the tournament. So I like that. But a lot of the other matches kind of fell flat to me. And I thought I know they wanted to expose different talent to everybody on the future show. I just thought they might have, like, tried to book one or two matches you knew that was going to get over huge, or a match that you know that's fans want to see. They threw a lot of stuff out there that I don't think I've ever, besides Gresham and Lynch, And then on paper, I'm Congressman Fly Warrior. Everything else, I was like, yeah, I don't really care about. Except for maybe the Kingston Matt Lynch match, which I thought was going to be really good, and I was kind of disappointed by it. But nothing else was there where I was like, wow, I got to see this match. So I wish they could have given us, like, I'm not saying a dream match, but a match that just seems really good on paper that you don't want to miss. But I'll give it a thumbs up because I thought they were successful in elevating Gresham. And I liked the idea of getting the TV title put over, so I like that. But I felt a lot of the matches, besides the two Gresham ones, kind of felt kind of just there.
Yeah, I think I can definitely see where you're coming from there. Especially with the Matt Lynch Kingston match not being advertised and being an impromptu thing, it really did make it feel like on paper there was not much here. And I think that definitely makes the whole thing suffer overall. I do think that the Orange Cassidy Ultramantis Black match, depending on where you come down on it, felt like something that like you could be excited about on paper. So for me, I enjoyed it. But I definitely see where you're coming from, where if you want to crown this champion and you want to start this whole thing, you should probably have a show that feels bigger. And they did a better job of that on the Breaking the Barriers show. I felt like the Breaking the Barriers show definitely felt more like it had some big time juice to it. And this one just really felt like it fell off a cliff in that regard. And I agree with you though, but with all that said, that it's like a thumbs in the middle show that definitely delivered in a lot of ways, but just could have used something. Even if you just had like an MJF, you have him in the building, have an MJF match. Yeah. On the show, you know,
like just needs a little juice.
Yeah, because he's a guy who I think is really hot right now, who could have had a match that felt like it was a big deal.
Yeah, totally. With that said, man, when we close this out, do you have anything you want to plug, bud?
Just the same thing. I think last week, Can't Go No Ride, Art Zine on GoFundMe. I've heard of people complaining about GoFundMe. Why should people pay for your vacation? We're not asking. My wife is not asking for someone to pay for her vacation, asking for you to pay for a zine, an art zine. So if you want to buy it, buy it. If you don't. Can't Go No Ride. You can find it on GoFundMe. It's got a lot of cool stuff. That's about it. Otherwise, follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Follow me on Twitter at Tidy's Wrestling. I was just on the Place to Be podcast talking CWF Fan Fest. Follow me also over on WorldCast. WorldCast Wednesday. Every Wednesday we upload WorldCast the feed. And keep on supporting wrestling. And keep on supporting our shows. Thanks a lot and have a great week.
Niggas will lose their mind for it, wine for it, dine for it.
Pussy.
Spend time for it, see no color line for it.
Pussy.
Double back handicap and go blind for it.
Pussy.
Pussy got endless prisoners. Pussy always revenging her. Pussy is calculating. Good pussy is rather dangerous.
Pussy can be so facetious. The heavyweight champ. Pussy is so undefeated. That's amen to that.
I mean the pump fakes on the Facebooks and the screw face when they look won't get you no pussy.
I mean the fake chains and the code names for insecure gon' reassure you not to get pussy.
You overcompensate too much for the pussy. You like the door kind of shape for the pussy. See that's what pussy niggas do. I know the ways of a pussy. I see pussy looking at you. How many niggas get mistaken for clitoris in a day? How many sentiments you make before running pussy away? How many times she gotta tell you that dick is disposable? But if she fuck a young nigga like me, it's over for you. So line the middle fingers up, speak your truth.
You can never trivialize pussy, but a bum nigga like you would try it. Pussy. I know what you really about. High key your f*** is weak, buddy. Pussy. It's only replaced by your rubber substitute. We ain't feeling you.
Think I caught a vibe, kinda feeling it good. Touch the booty if you like, I ain't trippin' on you.
Such a nice girl,
I'm really tryna crack off on the headboard, to bust it wide open for the right one. It's you that's